Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's once again the time to gather around the radio, put some logs on the fire, and Dr. Drew's going to present Bergamot.
That's right. Our friends, This Life podcast is, of course, sponsored by Bergamot.com. We want to thank them. Go to drdrew.com, click on the Bergamot banner for details. I'll also be sure to bookmark the Amazon banner, drdrew.com, for your upcoming holiday shopping. And if you have any interest in our new podcast, which is a medically focused podcast, Weekly Infusion with myself and Dr. Bruce Heischober, Dr. Spaz, for those of you from the Corolla world. And we're proud of the newsletter because it goes along with that. It's written by Dr. Bruce and Michelle Poe. I have something to do with that newsletter. I get editing approval, and that's every Wednesday. And then, Bob, let's tell us about our guest.
Well, this is the man. He's a Renaissance man, lives all over the world, been many things, done many things as a job and career, and one of my oldest friends, and most importantly to me, the guy who got me sober, Chris Hoy.
Chris, I don't understand how you did that. Welcome to the show. Because we were there back in the day, too.
Well, let me tell you the one thing. I tell it all the time when I, you know, because I'm a rock star asshole, and I left my coffee cup in the sink with the coffee in it, right? Yeah. He came out of the kitchen and goes, Bobby, do you forget you can't wash a cup? Next time, wash a cup. And I was just so scared of him because he had just gotten out of prison, too.
Oh, good. Good. Well done. But probably so had you, right?
I got out of jail. He got out of prison.
I see. Okay.
That's different.
That is different. Chris, welcome.
Thank you. So. It's nice to be here.
Does he need to
pull your mic up?
Yeah, pull it closer.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
I've never participated in a podcast
have
before.
Have you never?
No. I've
ever
listened to quite a few.
Oh, really?
Oh, well, good. This is good. This one's pretty easy.
But the thing about Chris, this goes back to the 80s music scene in LA. One of the most vibrant, filled with so many interesting people, not just the musicians, but the fans and the whole scene. And you remember.
Oh, yeah.
And Chris was a part of that. And I think the first time I met you was over the WAG benefit, right?
No. The first time I met you, I don't even think you know this.
It was very interesting. I might have had a cocktail.
Yeah. We were in some strip mall in Orange County going to see the Chili Peppers, and there was Bob completely drunk, and David King was trying to 12-step you.
Oh, yeah.
And you were so drunk, and I was just going, man, you're wasting your time with this guy, David. You know, it wasn't long after that, I think you stole his girlfriend.
I stole his girlfriend. Oh. That was the 80s, Drew. All kinds of things could happen in the 80s. Guy with best of intentions trying to help a guy get sober ends up losing his girlfriend to the drunk guy.
Ugh.
Yeah. Oh, well,
it was a blessing, a time.
But a blessing for him.
And then the few times I saw you after that, you were playing music, and it was so bad. And they were falling, and it was just like, I couldn't believe it. And then Lindy gave me an advanced cassette copy of Next Saturday Afternoon, and I listened to it, and I couldn't believe that music was coming from that group I saw two nights before. I was like, oh, my goodness.
Studio's a little easier.
But we saw some of that in the documentary.
Yeah. That was right, that
Bob
era.
And the Monster.
But then I got sober, and then we did the WAG benefit.
Yeah.
Right? Here's the thing about...
Which time did you get sober?
Oh, yeah. 86, something, 87. When was the WAG benefit?
88, 87? 87, 88, somewhere.
So WAG, a mutual friend of all of ours, a bass player, Mary's Danish, got in a bad motorcycle accident and need hip replacement. Mm. In the old days, there was no insurance for anything. Right. We all played at the Palladium.
You just didn't know about it.
We just played at the Palladium.
Of course there was.
Not for homeless musicians.
Dude, I worked at a county hospital. That's all we treated. Lots of them.
What the fuck is that, Hoy?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know anything about that.
You just didn't know. You didn't see. You were grandiose. You figure, hey, man, give me some money so I can go to the hospital I want to go to.
He had hip replacement. I watched a video of it. They give you a video before you
even
have hip replacement.
I like the way he didn't go to the county like everybody else. He had to have a fundraiser.
What, Cedars?
No. Wow. He walked around limping for years. It was really bad. Like, Anthony's like, look, we need to do something about you.
Yeah.
But they give you a video, and I remember I was back drunk again, watched the video with him, where they show you what's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
Why did they do that, Drew, as a doctor? It scares the shit out of you.
Well, you sort of have to. That's the way the laws are. You have to
pull
shoot.
Your leg off, pound a ball into your leg.
Yeah, it's barbaric, isn't it? People think that surgery is some sort of, like, you know, some sort of artistry, like, you know, doing a great improvisation,
jazz sax
painting.
Solo.
Yeah, no, it's a hammer and a mallet, and a
auto
chisel.
Body.
Yeah.
So that's when I really became close with you and you guys, and there was a circle of friends. And then when the time came, when I got out of jail, Hoy saw me and said, "You can stay on my couch, Bobby."
I saw him in a meeting, and you had about four days. Yeah, and I was like, I was, you know, just into a, I had a house, you know, it was first time for me, you know, I was on a roll.
And you've been sober how long at that time?
16 months or something.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's risky to bring somebody to Bob around.
Oh, it was really bad.
And a couple months later, Chris Boehm.
Yeah. Oh, no.
He had me and Boehm living in his house.
Yeah, and it wasn't long before we all got thrown out. My girlfriend got rid of all of us.
Yeah.
We all had to go.
Of course. And did you help him get that dishwashing job, Bob?
No, it was right around the corner from where we lived.
I remember you said you were on the couch.
It made it convenient, that's for sure.
I remember you were on the couch when you were doing the dishwashing. Yeah. Tell people about that.
Well, Chris let me stay on his couch, and it...
No, the dishwashing, what happened there, where
that
was.
Well, it really was Keith Morris, the Circle Jerk singer. You know, he lived in the same neighborhood in Silver Lake, and we went to eat at this restaurant. It was owned by an old friend of mine, Patty, and her dishwasher had walked out. And so she said, "Bob, what are you doing these days?" And I said, "Well, I'm working on a record." Mm-hmm. I just was staying on Chris's couch. And Keith said, "He's not doing anything. He just got out of jail, and he's staying on a friend's couch." That's how I got that job.
Chris Boehm said that, or you said
no,
that?
No, Keith did.
Keith Morris said that.
And so
Keith was working there also.
Well, yeah, and then he ended up working there. I was the first one.
Okay.
Didn't that become a place that people got their first sober job?
Yeah, a lot of people.
Yeah.
It became kind of a tradition.
Yeah,
I don't know why. But
there wasn't much insurance then for rehab, so it was Millie's.
Millie's restaurant.
And how long did you wash dishes for?
A year and a half.
And he told me you ran into somebody there after a while.
Lots of different people.
And so they were like,
what
are you
doing? They'd be embarrassed. Vishante told me one time, "It makes me really sad to see you working so hard. Whatever you make here, I'll pay you more not to work." That was a kind thing from Vishante.
He wasn't doing very good at that point either.
Yeah, but he was doing better than me.
No, but I mean, from a...
It just made him, he was sober then, but it made him feel emotional. I said, "John, that's for you to figure out. Like, I love working here."
Yeah.
Right? And Gwen Stefani came by and she felt sad and asked me if I was okay. I think people associate being on drugs and being a dishwasher. There's no way you can be on drugs and be a dishwasher in a restaurant.
Oh, they thought you're down and out.
Yeah, they thought I was down and out. Yeah. I was actually coming back up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You were at the pinnacle.
It never got better than that. But Chris... then we just become so close over the years. He was the road manager of the Bicycle Thief. Mm. I was sober. The guys in the band were sowing their wild oats. So me and Chris went across the United States for months, just me and him in a van.
What were you doing there?
I was the singer, and he was the road manager.
It was like,
we didn't want to travel with those guys.
Oh, I get it.
Well,
okay.
Bob was like, "Hey," he calls me up one day. He goes, "Do you have a credit card?" And I said, "Yeah, I got a credit card, Bob." He goes, "Well, hey, can you rent us a van? You want to be the road manager? We're going on tour with the Chili Peppers, you know." And I was like, "All right." You know, I was in Boehm got me into the movie industry, and I was done with that, those 15-hour days for 5 years straight. And Bob actually worked a little bit.
Let me just say, for Chris Boehm, is those of you that maybe from the Corolla Network.
Yeah, the Corollas know him.
Chris and Ray. Same Chris.
Yes,
same Chris.
I went to school with Chris and Ray and Adam. I went
really?
To North Hollywood High. They
Holy
were one grade above
shit.
Me. But they were the jocks. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we weren't hanging around with those guys.
Yeah. I knew it.
Oh, no, they were hardcore jocks.
Yeah, football guys.
Except Chris dropped out when he was about to become a big star and go to college football. And he just stopped. He just started, Adam said, he was
drugs
and sex. And that was, you know, more important to him.
Chris? Yeah, I introduced Chris to interview just drug use, I believe.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Chris.
A younger guy got influenced. But so, however we got
Did
involved.
You ever know Chris's dad?
I did.
The guy with the Firebird?
I did.
What was he like?
I met him after the fact.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the years before he passed away.
Oh, okay,
But he was still, you know, hitting the booze at the bar. We went and visited him at the bar.
He was hardcore.
Boehm's dad?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But the adolescent boys kind of liked him because he'd take him fishing and, you know, drinking, whatever, you know, to do stuff with them. Everybody else's dad was sort of reclusive.
Yeah, that. And right around that time when I got sober in 96, that's the first time I met Adam. We went over to Adam's house. He lived in like a weird condo in Toluca Lake.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember
exactly.
That?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this
on,
is...
On Moore Park.
He did tell me he lived in the Fifth
so,
Lake for a while.
So Adam Carolla knew I was sober and alive before you did.
Yes, by quite a margin. Probably about 6 years before I knew.
I know. Yeah. It was so funny. And I was like, I remember thinking like, this is not that nice a place to live if you're on the radio.
He just started in 96. That was year one.
Yeah, that was, really? He was just barely doing the Burcham stuff.
Yeah.
He didn't really kick in with you.
You guys were already doing the Loveline
show. No, in 96 we were. We just started.
Yeah, it was in the early part.
We were getting paid. We didn't get paid.
Like, here I am, a homeless person staying on a noise couch. I'm thinking, this is fucking ghetto. Like, that's a typical addict thing.
Yeah.
I remember thinking like, oh, and then it also gives you like, what's the point of trying if you're on the TV and you got a house like that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But he was just starting to make himself.
Took him another 5 years to get money to buy a house and that kind of thing.
Really?
Well, maybe, yeah. Yeah, I mean, his first house probably late
'90s. Bohm lives in that neighborhood now, too. Is that the neighborhood that you all grew up in?
Not far from there.
Jesus, can't you get a little further away from home?
These guys love the valley, I'm telling you. Well, this Chris...
It's that dark cloud over the valley.
Well, Chris, this Chris has taken a large leap.
What'd you do in the music industry, the movie industry, rather?
I was working art department, building sets and doing that with a couple of, you know, Umgad. I don't know if you probably know him.
Umgad Abu Zamzam.
Exactly.
I know... I've heard every Corolla story.
Right, right. So I worked at, Bohm got me a job with Umgad. He goes, you start tomorrow working for Umgad. I go, what do you mean? We're working in Malibu on the beach and I'm getting paid $15 an hour. Bohm's paying me. Bohm always hired me, you know. And he goes, you start with Umgad tomorrow for $13. And I was like, what's this? You know, but it ended up being turned into a career.
And then I worked for him for a little while. And for Chris, he took his job.
Yeah, I moved out of Umgad.
They called him Ummy.
But he
Umgad
latched. But here's what happened. Hoy latched on or got in this with this director called Joseph Kahn. Is that his name? Joseph Kahn became the biggest video director in the world. So you had all these recovering junkies that worked on Hoy's crew doing the Britney Spears video and the Elton John video and the fucking...
Leanne Rimes.
Did you do the Prince one?
Destiny's. We did Destiny's Child. Say My Name.
Wow.
How about that?
I did a few of those Destiny's Child.
and for people
TLC.
People that don't know history, that's Beyonce.
Yes.
Destiny's Child.
And that is the history of... But somehow just it all came to, you know, work out. And that... When you say to people, so your sobriety, if you just stay sober, it will work out... You know, it's also a community of people staying sober. It works out for Chris, so then we all benefit from his success.
But it's also a sort of a – there's so much faith in just starting somewhere and just working. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a faith-based
– washing your cup.
Expression, yeah.
cup.
Well, it's cleaning up your side of the street in all respects and just being accountable, being responsible, being engaged. And that's the part that I know Jason Waller is trying to focus on, and you are too.
Yeah.
Have the community, have the employee. And we've lost that for a long time.
And the question would be, I think nowadays it's different 20 years later. I think the person in Hoy's position that's becoming pretty powerful can hire a lot of people, right, Drew?
Yep.
Doesn't hire newly recovering addicts. Like you said, let Bob in your house. Oh, to hire Bob. Well, and that old school mentality doesn't exist anymore. I know that the people that are rising up that are getting jobs are not hiring newly sober
there
people.
There are places in New York that are doing that, New York City.
Yeah, non-profit things.
Non-profit, parents giving back, that kind of thing. It's starting to happen a bit in the Upper West
Side. I thought we'd delve into that. Why did you hire all of us? Me, Andy, you know,
Clark.
Clark. Who else was on? Bohm was in there sometimes.
It was all those.
All people not the most dependable, but he made us dependable. The opportunity made us rise to the opportunity.
To be fair, you were all privileged white boys.
it was all non-union work, and we needed anybody we could. It didn't matter if you were white or not. It was like, come on, let's go. We got to get this job done.
Yeah, it's good.
It was crazy.
And we were all getting paid, like, you know,
big
$150
money,
a day.
Yeah, like, it was crazy.
Just think about you and your privilege, Bob.
Come on. I just never forget that when you took me to Adam's house, and I was like, Jesus.
That's right. That's his white privilege right there. He's expressing. So you end up leaving the country at some point.
And why did you admit it? You don't like the taxes. Admit it.
It was everything.
He became more conservative way before anybody else.
I walked away from the studio job and started doing with Bob on the, I got offered a few other rock things after that, and I was like, you know, and then I got into the clothing business, was relatively successful there, and every time it was like, I paid my taxes. I did. We did really good.
He hates bureaucracy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I wasn't in student government. I wasn't like, you know, those the jocks. I wasn't any of that. Yeah. You know, I was a surfer and a, you know, stoner, and that's the, you know, thing I was doing. But I started, you know, AA and all that stuff. It got me, you know, like, okay, follow the rules and do it. And then we did really good. Made a bunch of money. It was like we made like $6 million 1 year.
Ooh.
And the government got $300,000. And my partner got $125,000. I got $125,000, and I was like, "Where's the money?" You know, they got and they were sitting with the accountant and tax guys and all the big table, and they're like, "Well, just sell more." And I was just like,
"Yeah,"
you know, pulling my hair out. And
no, that is this is the stuff we were talking
this
about.
This is why he left.
But this is what this is the reason the middle class getting so squeezed. Right,
and everybody, you got to understand at that point, Hoy and Dougie, these
and
guys.
How many jobs did you create with that business too?
Like 150. You know, 50
think about
people.
It. He created 50 jobs, and he is punished.
And he's
for
making
that.
The same amount of money as when they were doing it out of his garage.
Yes, and he's punished for creating those jobs. That's the part I don't.
And
like.
The other guy, and the accountants are like, just sell more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no
it was
problem,
like
dude.
We were like up for a year straight, you know, trying to make that, you know, just it was madness.
They ended up renting a whole block on Hollywood Boulevard, and you had that 24 hours a day, and Elijah worked there for a while. And it's just like, how many more T-shirts can a company sell?
Yeah,
it was crazy. And after all that, I was just like, there's no winning. You know what I mean? It was just like
that.
I know.
Is why he moved to
Bali. Can't get it.
There is no winning.
But then it did then it was the downturn of the economy, you know, which was just the higher ups doing some kind of, you know, 2007. They just flipped a switch and everybody's like, where'd the money go? And I lost a house. I was just like, I gave up.
Yeah.
And I said, all I ever wanted to do, even when I was in North Hollywood High, was surf. Mm-hmm. You know, so I would go to Indonesia once a year, and then finally I just said, it's so cheap here, I'm just gonna move here. You know, and there was no job, no more teenage millionaire. It was all over with. And, you know, the president-elect, Barack Obama, was the elect president just like Trump is now. And, you know, I said, I'm out of here. You know what I mean? And I left.
And where'd you go?
I started out in Bali.
Where?
And that's still where I live, not far from the Four Seasons.
Oh, my God. Where?
In Pachatu.
Is that towards the city?
Towards Uluwatu. No.
Uluwatu.
Yeah.
Oh, my
that's
God.
Where he
it's
lives.
So fantastic. Are you on the hill?
I am on the hill.
Oh.
But from that point, I started. I got bored after surfing for 4 years.
And, wait a minute. How did you support yourself?
I had a little bit of teenage millionaire money. And I just, you know.
You were living up there at that point, were you?
Yeah. It's
same
cheap
place.
There. It's
so,
cheap.
It looks very, I mean, it looks pretty swanky up there.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, it looks that way.
Oh. but it's, you know, it's for reals. I mean, it's a third world country, essentially. I mean,
is the electricity sometimes go off?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes, sure. But not too much.
But they all ride on scooters. Everybody.
Well, he had an accident on one.
That's the part that freaks me out, because there's got to be.
And there's no street lights.
No street lights. When there's an accident, what happens to you? You just lay on the street. Or you go home.
Yeah, I got into an accident, and these guys were carrying me.
Yeah.
The Indonesians. I come to, and they're carrying me, and I had, you know, busted my jaw in three places. Like, put me down, you know? And I looked, I saw the keys that were in the bike, and I didn't know what happened. I didn't know if I killed somebody. I didn't know what happened. I just got on the bike and took off.
With a broken jaw?
With a broken jaw, a separated shoulder, broken cheek.
There's nowhere to go?
There's no hospital?
And
you've been unconscious.
And I've been unconscious. Yeah. And I called my friend, and I'm talking on the phone with a separated, and I said, and my friend, I just got into an accident. They said, stay there, we'll come to you. And I said, it was a couple of guys from L.A., they were leaving that night, and I said, I don't know what happened. I go, oh, shit, I think I just swallowed my tooth, you know?
Oh,
I can hear these guys in the other. I go, I'm just going to come to you. And it started pouring rain, and I'm just like.
Oh, no.
And I pull up, and these two guys, I just see the eyes and the indos, and they're just all like, I was like, oh. But at least I could, you know, I don't know how I did
it. Is there a hospital?
It.
Where do you go?
Oh, you know, we went to a couple places. They were just like
you go
blood all over the place,
they
you know.
Couldn't handle it. There's no emergency response system or anything like that.
Yeah.
Holy
how
God.
Far do you have to travel to get treatment?
An hour? Yeah, more than that.
Oh,
about an hour and a half.
That's all I kept thinking about when I kept seeing those people on the scooters. And it, by people, I mean it's one guy driving, a little child on the front handlebars, a grandma behind, and maybe a woman sort of stuffed in between somewhere, side saddle.
And they're
four of them on a Vespa.
Yeah,
essentially Vespa.
That's normal.
Right?
Yeah, more.
And there are thousands of those packing the road. And
it's like a video game. It's so much fun. Because you can go down the sidewalk. You know, there's no laws. There's no speeding tickets. Law.
So
it's
when lawless. I saw all those people and these kids and the grandmas, I'm thinking, oh, my God, if they get an accident, there's nowhere to go. So it's a Hindu country, right?
Yeah.
And so
it's a Hindu island.
Yeah.
It's the biggest Muslim country in the world, but that island's like probably 90% Hindu.
Right. It's Indonesia's Muslim, but the island is Hindu. They leave them alone, right? They don't
No, there's no problem.
There's no issues, yeah. And they're very interesting.
See, aren't we proselytized that there's so much fear of Muslim countries and Muslim He lives there.
Bob,
I keep saying
Bob. They shake you down wherever the fuck you go, including he's driving his Vespa. They'll put a mirror under his goddamn if he goes into a gas station, right?
Sometimes, yeah. Some of those places, yeah.
What do they do?
You mean like for security?
They're scared shitless of Muslim extremism, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, kind of.
You can't go anywhere without a guy with a machine gun and a mirror, right?
Yeah, but that not so much in Bali. Maybe into the Four Seasons, you know what I mean? That's a little bit different.
All the hotels, because the hotels what got attacked.
All the nice hotels, yeah. Especially that area, Jimbaran is where one of the bombs went off as well.
Yeah, there have been attacks there, but it's really against the Westerners, not against the Bali.
But I've gone all over Indonesia, and the Muslims are pretty nice people. I've never had a problem.
They
more dangerous people in AA than there are in,
the idea that there's something wrong with Muslims. That's what I tell our Muslim friends. I go, you guys have a PR problem. You gotta help people understand what this is. It's a faith about love and inclusion. It really is, very much. And it has this wacky sect that they need to kind of deal with. And it's their, and it's been co-opted, something they love. You know, they're more hurt than we are.
Yeah.
Something they love being co-opted and being used for this purpose. And I, what I don't understand is, why don't they get coalitions with everybody else to help fight it?
I think they're trying.
Yeah, in the meantime, get the PR going, the PR machine about how great Muslims are. They're just
but
like
in
anybody
a general
else.
Sense, I'm just a general American that pays a little attention. When he was down there and that bombing went, I was just thinking like, holy shit. And then I hadn't seen him in a while till last year when I played the birthday party, right? And he was telling me, no, it's fine. And I was like, I thought it would amp up and get crazy down there.
Oh, no, because the Hindus are so
there's no Arab Spring over there in Indonesia.
No. The Hindus are so, like, you get greeted with, what do you call this? Was there that greeting? They bow and, you know, look. It looks like, I'm used to that being like Thailand, sort of a Thai.
Yeah, their greeting is Om Swastiastu, which is swasti, meaning the swastika. Their swastika is all over Bali, you know what I mean? And it's you know, same with in Thailand. It's like everything's all blown out of proportion, you know, in the Western world.
Well, what does the swastika mean to Hindus?
It's welcome. It's over all the doorways.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's crazy what we...
Yeah, I mean, I use a few on Facebook every once in a while. People are like, oh, my God.
All right, with that, we'll take a little break. Be right back after this. Well, of course, you've heard me talk about Bergamot Mega Plus. It's derived from extracts of the bergamot citrus fruit. That's right. This is in the Calabria region of Italy. They use it there like crazy. They've used it for generations. It's something that's extremely rich in polyphenols. Now, I don't typically get behind supplements, but this is one I can sign off on. It is known to reduce the risk of heart disease. The Italian government has actually done some very good research on bergamot, as well as many studies to prove its effectiveness. Bergamot Mega Plus is a natural statin, right? That's an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. That's much like the medicines that people take, I myself take. Lowers triglycerides, raises HDL, lowers LDL. Some people take bergamot with the statin even. So it addresses also conditions faced by millions of people worldwide. That is the so-called metabolic syndrome, which is increased abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, high blood pressure. And it helps with that. It helps with insulin resistance. Now, I do suggest that you, of course, talk to your doctor if there's any question at all. And there are alternatives pharmaceutically that many doctors may recommend. But Bergamot Mega Plus offers an all-natural option. Cardiologists and physicians all over the world have recommended it. Its effectiveness is the subject, as I said, of many good quality scientific studies. So to learn more, visit bergamot.com. That's B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T. That is bergamot.com. Or click on the Bergamot banner on our website. I suggest you do so. And we are back. I want to remind people about our friends at Bergamot. Yeah, Bergamot, the bergamot fruit.
And it has no N, or it does? M-E-T or M-O-T?
M-O-T. If you have metabolic syndrome like I do, consider Bergamot Pro Plus. 100% natural. It's available. Strongest, most effective citrus bergamot product on the market. We had an Italian woman in here the other day from Bergamotta or whatever who was like, oh my God, you guys have finally figured this out. Particularly if you're statin intolerant, want to improve your vascular health, this is a great natural alternative. Even people on statins, you can talk to your doctor about it. If you remember, we interviewed one of the scientists that works on this product, and he himself is on both statin and Bergamet. Lots of research, lots of good outcomes. Heart disease, number one killer, both men and women in the U.S. So what are you waiting for? Invest wisely in your lifelong health with Bergamet Pro Plus. See it at the banner at doctor.com. Click through there or go to bergamet.com. Order Bergamet Pro Plus today. And remember, Bergamet for life. Bobby, what are you doing?
Oh, I just got a picture of my baby girl, Sydney. Oh,
so cute.
So cute.
How's it going?
It's going great. Sleep 6 hours now. It's three months old.
It's good.
I never seen 6 hours is a long time.
Yeah, yeah. It
and I get up thinking, like, she's not breathing. What the hell? She's been in there too long. You know that nervousness?
Yes, yes.
Because if it's every 2 hours, it makes you. Plus, it was your kid's birthday the other day, and we were both like, holy fuck, how did they have three kids at the same time?
Thank you. Thank you. Everyone who now has kids, or particularly twins parents, too, they know what
we. But both Chrissy and I, now she's been sleeping like 6 hours. 4 hours every night, but great. Six last night.
Is she breastfeeding still?
And when you look at the clock and it's been like 4 hours since you've been up, you're like, Jesus Christ, you got to go see if she's breathing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's so crazy. Yeah. That SID scares the shit out of people.
It should. It's good.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. It's for real.
So having a kid's like jet lag.
Yeah, it is. Mm. Hoy is one of my friends that said he never wanted to have children.
Well, he's been as good as his word.
Why?
You've been tempted?
I don't know. I just... Every relationship I've like everyone I know that's got married is now divorced. You know what I mean? And the kids are,
scares you.
Yeah, it scares you. The world's just so crazy.
And of course, it's exactly the people that we wish would have kids that aren't having kids, which is really what bothers me about that.
People.
Yeah, it's like you should be having them. The people that
I might be too selfish.
So you came back because you got family stuff.
Hey, by the way, it's the next generation could use a little bit of selfishness from the parents. Just a little bit.
No, I was on my way back to Indonesia, and I got a message from my stepmom that said, "Hey, I think you better come back here. I think I'm dying."
Oh,
you know,
no!
It was one of those, and so
You've been through a lot of death.
Yeah, I've been on the front lines of cancer now for the last 3 weeks, and that's no fun. And oncology and
that's your
John
stepmom.
Wayne
yeah,
in Santa Monica.
No, that same place.
Gloria
out by,
was that?
No, out by the place you guys had the in Huntington Memorial. But I mean, it's
right
just
here.
Like oxycodone, it's Percocet, it's chemotherapy.
Yeah, but listen, the opioids, this is what they're designed for, to take care of pain
for
and
sure.
misery, particularly in the setting of cancer. The problem is it gets used everywhere else, but
even with the cancer patients, I mean, my stepmom, the one day she was really in pain, and she took the pill, I thought, because she's going to sleep, then they put some Ativan on her for something else, for anxiety, and next thing I know, they called me and said, she's fallen. Yeah. So she was on the pain medication, was like, yoo-hoo, I'm going swimming, and got up and fell and broke her hip. And just like, madness.
Yeah. But what a good guy he is. He came back here before for this, too.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like I have a job or anything,
So he's like the guy you call when you need, hey, come and stay a couple months.
I was saying before, I got bored, so I started, I've always, shot photos, so I started shooting surf photos, and that's now great. I've been, like 6 months of the year, I spend on a little island off Sumatra that you can walk around in a half hour and shoot surf photos and surf every day. It's been pretty great.
What is that island called?
It's called Togat Nusa Retreat. Is where I work. It's a surfing retreat. It's like Disneyland for surfers.
Yeah, I heard. I think I just saw your pictures.
Oh, you probably did.
Yeah. Drone, you just put some up like a week or two ago,
you
right?
You do the drone stuff too, right?
Yeah, a lot of drone stuff. I use Bob's music. Yeah, I lived in a treehouse for 5 months this year.
What do you mean a treehouse?
Like they built a treehouse. A treehouse. I'll show you some photos. It's pretty crazy.
And you were telling us what the cost of living is there in Bali.
Yeah, in Bali. So Bali's my home base, and for $100 a month for my 2-bedroom house, it's very affordable.
That.
It's got my 30 surfboards in there.
$100 a month for a 2-bedroom home.
Crazy.
And in a beautiful area.
Yeah, it's I'm not on the beach. I don't have it. But if you for beach overlooking stuff is super
cheap. Why I was so excited Hoy was here. He's a guy that really did it. He's minimizing.
Really went to Canada.
He's really, but he's really minimizing how fucking angry he was getting taxed up the yin yang, creating all these jobs.
Well, your brethren seem to have put Mr. Trump into the White House because that's, I think, what that was about.
Yeah, stuff.
I expect you to go for a year or two and come back, but you never did.
No, I mean, I can't afford to.
Are you citizen of another country?
No. I'm still an American citizen.
So the idea is, there's a lot of talk.
I mean, Trump's probably my fault because I didn't vote, you know. But I've never voted, not once.
Wow.
I've never participated. It's like, you know, you can blame it all on me.
So when you were complaining to me about your 55% taxes, you didn't have a voice.
Yes, exactly.
Right? I'm not sure his voice would have done much.
He said he was paying 55% taxes in 2006.
Maybe it wasn't 55, but I'm paying personal tax, income tax.
Well, listen, you pay
double tax on
you. You pay the employee tax. You pay the workers' comp. You pay the state employment, whatever it's called.
EDD.
Hold on, EDD.
Listeners at home, hold on. Chris just keeps nodding.
This is what it takes to create business, create jobs in this country, in this state particularly. Then whatever profit you make, the federal government was taxing at about 35%.
Yeah, and that's the wholesale. We were doing retail at the same time.
Now it's
time,
about 40%, and then
California tax,
all the local and city taxes of things you try to sell, and then the state will come in and pile another 20% onto that.
And then your personal paycheck,
hey, man,
tax.
Chris, you need to pay your fair share, man.
What the fuck?
Pay your fair share.
That's why after that I was just like, you know, I'm done.
He has this huge company that's all over the world. Yeah. He's making. He told me, I'm making the same amount of money when we were doing it out of my garage.
No, but what the most troubling part is 50 jobs get lost because of that BS.
But that was one that everything went down.
Like, I know, I understand.
Furlease was all over Melrose and, you know. Yeah,
it was bad.
So it was a crazy time, but I expect him to come back. So the idea is, why do more people not do what Chris is talk about doing? I've talked about it. Anthony and Flea have talked about it.
Leaving the country.
Yeah. Josh Klinghoffer was talking about it to me on Tuesday night, late Tuesday night, right?
What's that? We don't hear you, Susan. Go ahead.
They're all coming to Bali now.
But, well, Bali is a paradise,
by
the way,
too. No one ever
does
it, but Chris did it.
Listen, it's hard enough to sell your house and move into a con. You know what I mean? It's just, it's hard to move to a different city, let alone a different country. It's hard.
And they told me, well, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to go surf.
Do you speak the local language?
I do. I can get by.
Yeah.
I can stay out of trouble.
It's not an easy language. It's hard.
Speak a little bit of it. Say hello to me.
Selamat pagi. Good morning, Bobby.
How's the surf today?
Yeah. Bagaimana selancar hari ini?
That sounds Italian.
No, it's kind of close to me. My ear, when they're speaking, it sounds like Filipino a little bit.
It is. There are a lot of the same words in that whole Southeast Asia
interesting,
area.
Interesting.
I was just in the Philippines, Thailand. I mean, it's so beautiful. The people are so nice everywhere, you know? Cambodia.
This is what Americans need to hear. The people were so nice.
Of course they are.
But for some reason, we've been living with this thing for 15 years, 16 years, of you better be scared. They all hate us. Yeah. Everything's bad.
Southeast Asia. They love us.
Everybody knows where they hate us. They hate us in Iraq and Afghanistan, right. And Saudi Arabia and Iran.
France.
I was going to say that. He's
France.
Right. Yes.
France?
Yes.
Yeah.
French hate us.
Yeah.
The English don't hate us, do they?
Some of them.
They got some concerns. they got a couple notes for us.
But,
and, a lot of the hatred in Western Europe, for sure.
I mean, the stuff that goes on in America is just ridiculous. You know, I mean,
what does it look like from over there?
I just know what it looks like through my life. I just watch this stuff and, like, I mean, I got put in jail for $60 worth of marijuana.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
2 years in prison.
Good news is
2 years in prison.
Yeah, it was for crime. I was under the influence. I got arrested. Then I got out, and then I got caught with $60 worth of weed in three different bags. You know,
distribution.
Well, California's taking care of that.
They have.
Although I don't quite understand what's going to happen. All the people are still in prison for a pound.
Well, I guess Obama just said a bunch of them overturned a bunch of things I heard in
California.
No, I don't know. I think overall.
Because the people in jail for weed is like... Mm.
Yeah, but it makes money having people in jail.
I know, I understand.
I mean, I was in it. All of a sudden, you're getting moved somewhere, and you're going, where am I going? I don't have a court date. They go, get in the bus. You know, you're going... You know, they just run you around just to You know, it's
how many prisons were you in?
I think three different ones. Moving.
Three in 2 years. Yeah. I remember when he got out. Then you had to go to that place on Vine Street in Hollywood.
Yeah, that was another
funny story. You can't even go home.
So I don't know how I reached. I saw Bob at a meeting. Bob said,
I was sober at the time.
Yeah, he was sober. I said, Bob, can you come get me? I need to go to a meeting. I got to get the F out of here, you know. And so Bob shows up. It was on that up above Tower Records, so it's on the hill.
Capitol Records.
Capitol Records. By the freeway.
There's a big parole house there.
Yeah, so Bob shows
up. Hundreds of guys in there.
I know exactly where that is.
Yeah.
I come out, get in your car. You had like an old beat up. It was like an old cool car. I get in. Out of gas. Typical Bob Forrest. But we managed to get from there. We coasted all the way down to Santa Monica
Boulevard to get gas.
And I had to pay for the gas, too.
I was like a couple months sober, though. I was trying.
Yeah, and then, you know, a few months after that, that's when you were on the couch. You know, I remember I'd be somewhere, and they said, Bob's doing great. He's at my house. They go,
I had a Cadillac. It was a Cadillac that I had.
They go, Bob's at your house and you're not? He's going to take all your shit. You know what I mean? I was just like,
same
that's
action
all
I had.
Yeah. Everyone I saw. But I mean, look at you now.
Well, things can change.
Yeah. We used to stay in touch through Gloria, who's our dear friend
there. He was also new Gloria Scott.
Yeah, really well.
They don't make people like that no more.
No.
You guys want to take some emails? There's very interesting ones out here. I've got some good ones.
Emails.
Hoy's got a real common sense about drug addiction.
The back to basics. How about that?
Back to basics.
Do some he's the emails one that, here.
He's the one that grinded in my head. Don't use no matter what.
Yeah.
Right?
All right. Here's a good rehab question. How do I get into rehab when all I have is state insurance, meaning like Medi-Cal, and I need help for my whole family is or was an addict. Please help me get into rehab. I need help.
Is that in California?
Courtney. She would have said Medi-Cal if we're California.
Okay.
But here's the deal.
I'm working on a network that's going to get everybody connected to all the different places in their region according to their zip code. They're all there. If she was in California, I'd say there's a place in Hemet. I have the name in my phone. Call them right now. You might have to wait a week, but you'll get into detox. You'll be there for 2 weeks. They'll find you an outpatient program. But here's the thing. I did this for a friend of mine a week ago. Call me. Desperate. Relapse after 3 years. He thought because he had this PPO insurance, he was going to go to this place that I work with in Malibu, right? Because they take insurance. But he couldn't. He didn't qualify there. And I found him a really good place in Reseda. Right? He's like, Reseda.
Well, that's when you know people aren't ready.
But that's a lot of times with the medi people, their reaction to the quality of care.
It's not going to be pretty.
And I always like to say, I got sober on Chris Hoy's couch.
Yeah, that's right.
It was not that nice.
That's right.
I got sober in the county jail. It was worse than my couch, that's for sure.
So what's our answer to the
question? She's got to call the Department of Social Services in her major city or county.
Or mental health, too, right?
Mental health. But social services is where they really know where the detox beds are. The problem is people don't want those beds.
I know. I understand
that. And they don't have the persistence and the tenacity to do what it takes. It takes a week or two or three maybe. They always tell you an exaggerated amount of waiting list time.
Yep.
As a weeding out process.
Yep.
They're going to tell you it's going to take, it could take up to six months.
You have to call.
And then the person's going to go, they don't have any beds. Get on that list.
You have to call, not your family. That's the other thing. They got to see that you're the one that wants to come to treatment. And stay and find and keep working. The system will work on your behalf, but you have to work it.
And here's a cheat sheet for someone like that.
I'll just have my mom call you for the next 2 weeks.
I know less
people
do.
She's coming with us.
But here's the thing that people do also. Since they don't know where they're going from the detox unit, they get very anxious. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Professionals will then be involved, and they will find you a place to go.
That's right.
So how do you find the Department of Social Services?
You just go in the
Google. Department in your state.
Health and Human Services, it's called in California. I don't know what it's called there.
Just Department of Mental Health, Social Services. You know, when people say DPSS, Department of Social Services. And and I would also advocate on behalf of the Salvation Army. Salvation Army has quality stuff. People, that's another group that I told they need a new PR agent. I mean, they look so like, what are these people? These people in these weird outfits. They take care of, they do great mental health
Hundreds
services.
Hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, great
and
mental health services.
Here's another thing that You can just call any 1-800 number that's available that people know about. Suicide hotline. Everything is connected in the social services world. Mm-hmm. The suicide hotline, if you have addiction, will know what phone number to call for addiction.
To be fair, it's a little, you know, different states have different issues and stuff, and so it's not quite as clear as Bob and I are making it. But the point is, it's there. You just have to find it.
Yeah,
that's the bottom line. All right, this is Kanani. I was a prostitute for almost half my life. How do I move past the feelings of wanting to go back, even though I know I shouldn't?
Is it the money or the shame or both? That's
or
the
sex addiction or the lifestyle. They get addicted to the lifestyle too.
That's the money.
The money's part of it. They like the thrill of it. It's a drug addict thing. It's a very similar to drug addiction.
Oh, it's hard to separate out which is which.
That's right. And
it's hard to get out when you're in it, too.
That's right. And there are people that specialize in getting women out of this cycle and helping support them.
Sharon Mitchell does.
Sharon Mitchell does. I look up her stuff online. Sharon Mitchell, and she's an MSW?
Yeah.
LCSW, something like that. But she was in the industry and now gets other women out.
She has a whole program for it.
Yep. Very good.
Mostly out of the porn industry, but I'm sure out of prostitution.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's the Children of the Night. Hoy, isn't that one that used to be in Hollywood?
That's for adolescents, though, really.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, primarily.
But it's adolescent prostitutes?
Mostly how they're surviving. And then I would just say, you know, go to SLA. Go to Sex Love Addicts Anonymous. And there are people there that have been in it. You'll find people of like mind, and they will welcome you. And, you know, it's, again, typically a trauma thing.
There's also battered women's shelters.
You were sexually abused as a child. Now you're being trafficked. You're being trafficked. You know, you're in sex, and you're being exploited, even though it feels like something thrilling. It's not.
You have a choice.
I mean, the doctor's saying to go to a 12-step program.
Oh, hell yeah. Are you kidding me?
Like, Hoy, you know what Hoy's big on? Nicotine Anonymous.
That's
baby.
Where Bobby knew where I was going.
Good for
with
you.
That.
Yeah, those are hard to find, actually.
Yeah, really, and they should be in football stadiums because there's so many people dying every year because of it.
I totally agree.
You grew up in AA, right? Your mom's in it?
My father.
Father's in it. So he never, I never felt like AA was your home. It was your...
Me.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean...
But
once he
went to Nicotine Anonymous, he became like the Führer of Nicotine
Anonymous. There's a really weird thing, speaking of swastikas. that's his insignia, the Nicotine Anonymous, strangely enough. But and it just means welcome. Welcome to Nicotine Anonymous. But the kids of 12-steppers come to treatment more readily, with less consequence, but spend a lot of time hating 12-step. Was that you?
Not really. I mean, I got pushed towards it at about 15.
Yeah.
So I've been in it for...
But you weren't hating it at that point?
No, I was like, I stayed clean for 30 days. I was like, I'm not an addict.
No, but your general sense in the 12-step world, and I like to talk about it so other 12-steppers know that they're not alone. Mine is, you know, I like arguing and I like the whole mishigash of it. You were a traditionalist, and you... would constantly be like, Bobby, this is bullshit.
Did you ever go to the Pacific group?
Yeah, but I wasn't.
Did you ever go to the Atlantic group?
I'm not sure.
You would love that, I think. Because that sounds more like what Bobby's
describing. He's like,
Yeah. The Atlantic group is a bunch of old-timers just go, shut up.
Do they have it in L.A.?
Sit down, shut up, and listen.
They don't have it in L.A.
It's in New York. And it's shit out. This is a bunch of old timers. Shut up.
That's what we.
That was Hoy at 34 years old.
Yeah.
And so Nicotine Anonymous is where you really became.
Like, well, I just like when I first went in there, I heard they said they were reading the literature, and I just started laughing because someone tricked me into there. Said, "Oh, meet me at a meeting," and I was like, "Oh, okay."
And Nicotine Anonymous.
Yeah. And it worked. I didn't smoke since that day.
In Bali.
No, this was in L.A. This is what helped me change my whole life. That it was all going on while I was doing that company, and I had a new perspective. I'm like, I hate this job.
Yeah,
I hate my business partner. This is all bullshit. You know, America's not doing so good. I'm out of here.
I'm going to bet there must have been some people you really connected to in that particular program.
Yeah, it was just more like I started doing the work what happened. Yeah.
And is there 12-step in Bali?
There is. There's a... There is in the main area. There's a couple of rehabs as well.
Is it conducted in English?
There's a Russian rehab near his house.
Wow. By main area, you mean...
like Kuta, Seminyak area.
Seminyak.
Yeah.
There's an area, there's a very westernized shopping area and bars and stuff.
It's like
right?
West Hollywood.
Yeah, it's kind of like West Hollywood.
And that's where the rehab is?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where the meetings are, most of them. There's some up in Ubud as well.
Boot's an hour away, though, right?
Yeah, yeah, but there's still a little community up there. No, it depends upon what time of day
you're
going.
What scooter you're on and how many people you got.
Yeah.
Yes. We didn't make it up there, I'm sorry to say, because we were too lazy.
That's more like the trendy yoga kind of area, Rice Fields.
But tell me about the Russian rehab center you've heard. They're really harsh?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it'd be the rich Russians. They have it all set up on a hill. It overlooks the whole place. It's really beautiful.
Do you think it's much like a Malibu rehab? Or
Yes, it's very much. Like I had I used to go every week and bring a, you know, someone from the program and do a talk. Exactly.
So, and they're all 12-step based? Russians, Drew, doing 12-step based treatment in Bali.
Hmm. We must contact these people. We must, with swastikas over the door.
Yeah, they're doing. They're doing. But they have the book, both NA and AA, in Russian.
Oh wow,
that's really interesting.
I would expect that it would.
But
be
they have
different.
It in. They have it in. You know, all the languages.
That's something.
It's in Bahasa,
but
Indonesia.
But not a lot of them have rehabs. This idea of a Russian rehab that.
Well,
that
no, they're very westernized. A lot of the.
But
super
that they don't
ones
send their rich. That the oligarchs, I'm assuming, don't send their nieces and daughters and sons to fancy American rehabs. They send them to Bali. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, because America and Russia have never been like.
Right. There's close that friends. Issue. There's the problem. Although we treat. If you remember, we treated some Russians back in that day. Do you remember that?
More Middle Easterns than I remember. A lot of Middle Easterns.
I do remember
Egypt,
that, but I remember some scary Russian dudes we had.
Yeah.
Super scary.
Yeah.
Like, these guys freaked me out. You don't remember them. Maybe you weren't even there yet.
Maybe
you weren't there yet.
Maybe I would not have been there.
Yeah. Oh, my God. They were. There was the beginning of the Russian mafia, and these guys were showing up.
Getting too into the crack. They had to slow down.
Yeah. Meth. Meth was their thing.
Meth?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, alligator, some weird stuff. Like, some derivative of meth, I think.
Is that what's going on?
How much time we got here?
Take a look at another question.
Yeah, I'm going to another question. This is from Danette. Husband of 11 years, smoked pot. Wait. My ex-husband by 11 years. Smoked pot, began drinking when he was 12. He stopped drinking, but behind my back several years ago, introduced my children, being 13, my youngest, stated that his role as dad was to introduce them to pot. All he thinks about is pot. He's fixated on it. My older daughter thinks it's not the pot that's the problem, but that he has mental illness, which could be true. I tend to believe that he is an alcoholic and use pot because it's, quote, less harmful. So he can function. He's black and white in his thinking. He has no empathy. He's also an optometrist. Oh, God. He has never worked full-time and now works one day a week. Very bright, has stated the children should, quote, balance their chemicals.
Balance
oh, boy. He's 63 now, and he is isolated. This is a sad story. Yeah.
Sounds like an interesting guy.
Pot is insidious, though, the way it creeps up on you, right?
Yeah. But I know a few guys from North Hollywood who are still smoking pot every day.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so... Like,
and what are they doing?
Their whole life was smoking pot.
Yeah. And did they do anything else? They able to function okay? Or?
Not really.
Not really.
I don't want to use names because everyone, you know, Adam, all those guys live right around the corner from them.
Well, that's the sad part for me is that it sort of blunts the engagement. Right?
Especially over a
long... It dulls everything.
Well, we can talk about this because we treated him on TV, but our buddy, the actor...
Eric Roberts.
Eric Roberts was... It was crazy how it affected him. We got him off, and his career just went pew.
Yeah, and he described feeling what we saw on the show, and then I saw him for months afterwards. This anger, and you had it too. He was so scared of his anger. He'd be like, "Listen, if pot's the only thing I need to hold this anger down, y'all better be thanking me." for doing this.
Yeah.
And what's the same thing?
Yeah, it was caffeine, nicotine, fear, and anger. That was like...
What was the anger? Was it not being able to smoke pot?
Just about everything, yeah.
You were angry too, though, but you found heroin.
Yeah, and I was less angry than Hoy.
Oh, is that right?
But after the fact, I was angry. After I got off the drugs.
Yeah.
Can we help that woman?
I would contact law... I would start with social services again. I would contact law enforcement. Because you can't... even if it's recreationally legal...
But the kids are adults,
they're
right?
They're 13.
Oh.
That's no go. You can't give kids alcohol. You can't give kids pot. You can't give kids, it's illegal to give kids...
Well, I smoked a lot of pot at 13.
No, I know they do, but your dad didn't hand it over to you.
No.
What if the kids report it to their teachers?
Ooh. That's another way to do it. It's a good way to do it. But, I mean, it's, you know, I just get the kids away from him if he's in court.
Yeah, if they report him, dad's going to be in big trouble. Yeah.
The reason why I don't want to go there, this is happening all over California.
The adults
giving pot to kids.
It's a big mistake.
It's a big problem.
One thing we do know
is it's a subject that the legislature and the and the public at large did not want to have a conversation about.
Well, no, they claimed they were going to take care of it by making it illegal, just the way alcohol is illegal. But yeah, listen, the big
do you
problem,
know what the penalty is for giving marijuana to your 13-year-old child?
What?
Prison.
Yeah.
So you're going to put people's parents in prison rather than educate and talk to and try to figure out? But we don't like to talk and educate and figure out.
Well, we're trying right
What's
now.
What's wrong with pot if you don't abuse it?
Giving it to your kids.
It affects the adolescent brain in a very, very substantial way. Even just a little bit of use can change.
But I mean, and if you don't go along with it, kind of get along. Oh, pot, yeah. If you have a critical idea, I've been telling parents all the time in similar situations: ex-wife, ex-husband giving pot to the 16-year-old kids. Usually, listen, you can't give them alcohol. So why can you give them pot?
Exactly. I feel the same way about
it
alcohol I do about pot.
It seems pretty simple to me, but with pot right now, because we've rushed forward into this legalization, it's all so foggy and ill-defined.
No, it's the most wonderful time of the year. it's something that's good for you,
but
only.
Why can't we have a hard rule? If it's not okay to give 13- and 16-year-old kids alcohol, it's not okay to give them pot.
We do. My kids were that age, I just said,
no. If you give them alcohol, you go and you get a basically a ticket. If you give them drug, which is still marijuana, which is still a class whatever drug by the federal authorities, it's prison.
Well, okay, I agree with you. That should be adjusted. But the thing about alcohol is shitty things happen to adolescents when they drink, and those adults that are responsible for giving the alcohol are accountable for anything that happens. That's where they get themselves in big trouble.
Yeah.
Pot won't make you do stuff like that. Pot just hurts their brain, and, you know, they should avoid it. That's all. And, you know, if somebody gives it to them once, they shouldn't be vilified for that. But it sounds like a little
trying
bit of that
to
going on.
Integrate.
And this guy could have mental illness, but, you know, how do you get him into treatment if he has mental illness?
Well, the police are going to take him somewhere.
Well, no. I mean, other than taking that kind of action.
You know what's stranger?
What?
If he gives the pot, and this is what a woman I was counseling was about the same with a husband. I said, you know what? If he gives it to your kids, that's going to be looked at as a gray area. But if he gives it to other people's children,
oh boy,
you're going to prison. And you need to tell him that. Or his lawyer does. Or somebody needs to educate him about this is serious
but
business.
In terms of his maybe having mental illness, if he has a doctor,
they don't have excuses for mental illness, do they, Chris, going to prison?
No, they don't care.
They don't care, Drew.
No, I'm trying to take a more therapeutic approach to this man, that's poor guy, that the optometrist can only work one day a week. He may have mental illness, and he needs to, if he has a doctor, you should call that doctor and report what you're concerned about. The doctor may not be able to speak to you, but you can just say, look, here's what's going on, please evaluate him next time he comes in. That's all.
Yeah, it just makes me angry. Everything makes me angry. I'm an angry moderate now, Chris Hoy.
One thing you guys do is you get people into rehabs and stuff like that.
I mean, if I
have a problem, I call Bob, you know, and you guys both helped a friend of mine, Steve, in the wheelchair. I mean, that was like he was in a coma, and I went to the hospital, and I just go, what do I do? And I went over to the place in Pasadena where you were.
Remember Steve in the wheelchair.
I do remember Steve.
Yeah, that was him, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bob goes, if he comes out of the coma, have him ask for this doctor, and we can – and you guys got him sober again.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
That was tough.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He had to go to the locked unit a couple times.
Yeah, of course. He's one of my friends. Good ones.
Yeah. All right, well,
that about does it for today. Again, Chris, thank you very much.
Let's give a boost to his resort.
That's
what's the name of it?
Togat Noosa Retreat.
There you go. You can be a representative, a podcast.
Disneyland for surfers.
And then is there a website for the photographs and things?
I do have one called HollywoodHoy.net, but it's kind of underground. This isn't the first time I've ever told anyone
Tell
other
people.
Than my friends. There
HollywoodHoy, HOY.net.
Yeah.
Well, where'd it go? I think I've seen there was some article about the surfer Disneyland, you know, that island.
Their catchphrase?
No. That's just what I call it.
No, but it was something
it's
like
probably
that.
Another one.
Or Surfer Paradise or something.
There's 18,000 islands in Indonesia.
But
so.
Does this have a particularly great break?
Many of them do.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Again,
it's got a lagoon that he shows the lagoon and the housing right above the water, and the water's clear.
Why don't you just stay there all the time?
Because there's an off season.
But still, you could stay there.
I could. I'm supposed to go back there in January to island sit.
But it's not like there's hurricanes.
Island sit?
I've done it a couple times.
Island sit by yourself?
Yeah. Me and the monkey and the three dogs and the cat.
And it's not the cyclones or something, right?
No, no.
Is it cyclones or hurricanes?
There's typhoons, but not there.
Okay.
Bad storms. Dude, and you could rainy go.
That's
season.
Like Jack Nicholson, the Shining ship. You're like out on an island by yourself for months. You start talking to yourself?
No,
it's like it's Castaway.
There's Wi-Fi.
There's Wi-Fi.
Bob, it's Castaway, right?
Satellite Wi-Fi. It's like a set of Gilligan's Island is what it's like.
All right. Thanks again. Remember our friends at Bergamot. Check out the Amazon banner and do go doctor.com. Doctor.com. Check out all our family of podcasts that are growing. And we have the Podcast One podcast, which are me and Adam and by myself.
And thanks to Chris Hoy for saving my life so that two children can be born.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me up here.
It's that direct and it's that real.
Well done. Aww. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next time.